Very loud. And we're in chapter 20, and someone asked a question. Actually, it was Joanne. Good question last night, last week after class, because we were looking at chapter 20 where we see Satan being bound, and we were talking about here is a section where, in contrast to the rest of the book, it's talking about things that are still future even to us. So the question was, and it's a great question, is like, I thought there was bookends in the book of Revelation. Because remember, it started the first chapter, things shortly to take place. Chapter 22, come quickly. You know, these are things that are quickly or shortly going to come to pass. So everything in between is about stuff that's going to shortly take place. So how come you can all of a sudden have things future? It doesn't fit the context, right? Now, is that a good question? All right. And so here will be our answer, and I'll try to explain as we go on, is that in this revelation of Christ to John and the Christians of this era, and we're talking about 68 AD, somewhere in there, who are going through this terrible persecution, and they're wondering why God's allowing it, and when will there be vengeance for their blood that's being spilled. He spends the whole book showing how this great harlot's going to be overthrown. And who is the great harlot, Babylon? Israel. It's Jerusalem, which stands for all the Israel nation. It's the apostate Israel. They are the false bride. They used to be the bride of God, right? Now, who is the true bride now?
The church.
And we're going to see that here again. But we saw the wedding feast last time that here is this a marriage feast of the Lamb, you know, Jesus, who is going to be King of all kings, and his bride, the church. So how come there would be some future events in it? And the best thing I'm going to like it unto is there's some loose ends we got to take care of, and we're going to address them in a second. But if I'm telling you a count of what's going to happen in Africa, because you Wayne just asked that, how long does it take to travel there? Someone else, well, what are you going to do there? Well, I'm going to land in Johannesburg, and I tell you this and this. And then someone might ask, well, why are you going down there? What are your long-term plans? Well, in a couple of years, I hope to, could I, in my discussion about what I'm doing on this trip, throw in some details long-term? And they're not the purpose of the discussion, but there's just like a sidebar. And I think that's what John is doing, or Jesus is doing here for John. And I'll try to explain that as we go through here, that there's some loose ends that we have to deal with. And remember, we saw these last seven visions. We introduced them last week, and they all begin with the words, "And I saw," that we're going to see Christ ruling this great supper where the kings and the princes and commanders of the world are being eaten. The beast thrown in the lake of fire, we saw that was the destruction of Rome. Satan is bound, we saw that last week, only to be released for a little while after how long? And 1,000 years means what? Just some complete amount of time. Totally complete, whatever it is. There were yet to look at the first resurrection. No, we did look at that. Remember the saints before the altar? They've been crying for justice. They come to life, and they're now sitting and reigning with God. We're going to look at the final judgment. That's future. And then we're going to see today, tonight, the New Jerusalem. Now, when I say loose ends, this is really the climax when Babylon falls. It's the whole premise of the whole book. It's been building up through chapter 12. We see it depicted one way, and then 13 through 19, it's shown again from a heavenly point of view what's going on and the powers that are behind it, Rome and Satan. But Jerusalem falls, and we see the Christians getting the answer like, wow, we're going to be vindicated. Just hang in there. What was the word to every church of Asia in those seven letters in chapters 2 and 3? Stay faithful, and there's another word with it. He who what?
Overcomes.
Overcomes, yes. You got to hang in there. Just be overcomers and all the blessings. You'll sit on my throne. You'll be eat of the tree of life. You'll your name won't be erased. All the things he promises, but you got to just hang in there for a little while. That's all he's wanting to do. So now that it's all done and we see what's going to happen, so they go, wow, we can hang in there a little while. If that's what's going to take place and we know what to expect, we'll get out of town when we see the armies come and then Jerusalem will fall. But we got some questions, okay? How about the kings of the world who use this harlot? Remember that? You know, they got rich off her. Are they going to be punished for what they did? Well, what about Rome who supported her? Because remember, Rome was the power that she rode on its back, right? Yep. What about Rome? I mean, is it going to be judged for any of this? Then what about Satan who is behind all of it? What's going to happen to him? I mean, these are loose ends, and he's not going to spend much time at all. What about the saints who were killed by her? They're already dead, and they can't overcome, right? I mean, they're dead. Well, actually, they did overcome, right? By keeping their faith, and they didn't love their life even to the point of death. And what about all the unbelievers in the world? And the last question would be is, where is God's Jerusalem now? If we're supposed to be his kingdom, where's his temple? Is that a fair question? Now, where did I come up with all these? Well, because he answers all of these. So I just looked at the answers, and then there's the questions, right? And we've already looked at several real quickly, so let's review them. First of all, we see that Jesus rules, and he rules with a rod of iron, King of Kings, and Lord of Lords. Then he says, I saw this great supper. And that's where the commanders and the kings and the mighty men. So all these powers of the world, it's just a picture. It's only two verses. They're going to be just devoured. It's just a picture of they're going to come and see their own end. And then we saw the beast and the prophet. And that was who? Remember? The beast had come out of the sea and one on the land. And then Jerusalem rode on its back was Rome. We see that. It's thrown into the lake of fire. Now, that's not going to happen for some time, but there's only two verses talking about that. How much time is given to this in the big picture of the whole book? Just that much. And this is what's going to happen to Rome. So it's just a glimpse into the future without any details, but it's going. That's what's going to happen. Then we're going to see then also, we skipped that because we already talked about it last week. Then chapter 20, we looked at it last week as well, that Christ is ruling. We had the Great Supper. Rome is destroyed. Now we're going to see, well, what about Satan? Well, what happened to Satan? We know that, as we saw, he was bound for how long? So does God take care of him? Yes. Now, how many verses are dealt with that? Just two. Now, there will be one more verse. He'll be released for a little while. And it talks about that. This one more verse coming up right here, actually. Just one, right? No, actually, it's coming up after that. I'm sorry. The saints, here's going to be the answer to them. Well, they're ruling. The ones that died, right? They came to life. They lived before the God and they're reigning with Christ for the same amount of 1,000 years. By the way, anyone that dies during this time period, where do they go? If you're a Christian and you're faithful, where do you die? You join that same crowd right there. Do you understand that? We've talked about this before. You don't go into a waiting place. That's, you know, Christ went in there and rescued them, led captivity captive. If you were to die right now, that's where you go. And it's a beautiful picture, isn't it? And so that's why we already read, from now on, blessed are those who die in the Lord. Happy are those who die. Why are they so happy and blessed? Because of this picture. If this is not the picture and you're just going to some waiting place, that's not happy, is it? You know, like we're seeing here. And this is so empowering to the Christians of that day who are being martyred. Shall I keep the faith or shall I deny Christ and keep my life? When they see that if I die, I'm going to sit with Christ on his throne, what's that going to empower them to do? Take my life. I just hope it's quick, not too painful, right? Yeah. This is so thrilling. But it's true for you and me. And if your parents were faithful and they passed away, guess where they are right now? Right there. That's why Revelation is it's so encouraging for them and for you and me. We just got to be what? Overcomers. JC. Yeah.
Way infinitely worse than what you can imagine being bad.
Yeah.
And now that's been taken care of.
I think that's why Jesus, when he's being led to, you know, to die on the cross, people are weeping for him. What did he say? Don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves. Because what you're going to go through, and also the destruction of Jerusalem, but I'm getting the best part of the deal because what? He's going home. It's the people that remain. So, yeah, you're right. What they're dealing with on the earth is not nice at all. And so death is actually a deliverance, isn't it? Yes.
Verse 3.
Yeah.
And he threw him into the abyss and shut it up and sealed it over him so that he would not deceive the nations any longer.
Right.
Yet we see that today.
Yes. Yes. We talked about that last week. The sealing of Satan was for a specific purpose, not to deceive the nations. And when he's released so he can what? Deceive the nations. So we know the binding is not to take away all his power, because he can still tempt people and all that. But we suggested that you will no longer see a world-type government with Satan empowering it. Because when you look at Daniel 7, who was the first one? The head of gold. Babylon, world power. Succeeded by another world power, the Medo-Persians. Succeeded by the Greeks. And then succeeded by the Romans, who was a composite of all of them. All those nations were part of the Roman Empire, right? But then this rock cut without hands, we said it's Jesus, strikes it. And God then makes his own kingdom. Satan is bound, and there will not be any of this world power trying to challenge God. Has that always been Satan's work? Think about Genesis 11. What happened there?
Tower of Babel.
Tower of Babel. What were they trying to do? Challenge God himself. And how did he resolve that problem? It was no war, no swords, no nothing. He just changed their language like that. Then they're scattered. Now, we suggested then the only thing that seems to make sense, and he says so little about it, that there will be an attempt for the nations to coalesce into a world power again when he's released. But, well, look what happens. Right here, he will deceive the nations. He'll gather them together for war. Their number will be like the sand of the sea. And then what happens? They come up, fire comes down from heaven. It's done. I mean, that's all. Just one verse. They try, poof. No, there's no success at all. It's just over. That might be the end of this world. Doesn't say, but that sure makes sense. All right? So that is where we left off last week. So now we've covered all these loose ends. Satan, right? The beheaded martyr, or the martyrs, the Rome. But now we have two more things. What about the unbelievers? And then where's this temple now? If we're the true Israel of God, his kingdom. We're going to deal with those, okay? Oh, Satan too. What happens to him? Throw in the lake of fire. where the beast and the false prophet are. That was the symbolized Rome. And they'll be tormented night and day forever and ever. We're going to come back to this lake of fire, but there's torment day and night forever. Is this the place you want to go?
No.
No. And again, JC was talking about, we minimize. How do you describe what this is going to be like? There's no way possible for us to understand it. The most horrific pain you can go through, from what I understand, is to be burnt. Often people suffer mass burn. They die often just because the trauma is, then they have to later battle the infection and all that. But it's just, it's horrific. And all I can say is because our daughter went through some of that, you know, and it's terrible. So, yes. Yeah. You would, she's shaking her head saying there weren't word powers. But, well, okay, and maybe we have to go to a history class because Rome dominated pretty much everything. Now, can you say that of Great Britain? Or you still had the Asian powers and the Chinese and all that? They were not. Well, all of Asia, but I'm talking about the known world, you know. Well, known world, yeah, yeah. So it's something we can talk about, you know, on our coffee get-together to dissect some of these things because we're just doing a quick overview. But it's, and I'm not saying it has to be certain the way I present it, but I don't know what else it would be, okay? So, the final judgment. What about unbelievers? So now we're in chapter 21 and verse 11. And this is going to be, again, future, but it's just letting us know what will happen in the end here. And it's only five verses. And I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, whose presence the earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. Now, Jesus talked about it. Paul talks about it. There'll be a general resurrection of both the wicked and the righteous. Their bodies will actually raise from the dead. And they will all then stand before God. And you can see that in the Gospels and in some of Paul's letters. Now, that's what it's a picture of. Now, when they stand before the throne, books are opened. Now notice books, plural. Then it says another book was opened, which is the book of life. We've heard about the book of life already, right? Whose names are written in the book of life? Well, Donnie goes, mine. Good for you. You pass. Whose names are written in the book of life? Anyone that's saved, that's in Christ, that's been washed in the blood of the Lamb. All right? It goes, that blood flows backwards through all of the people of the Old Testament were faithful. It was present to Jesus' day, or you know, in the New Testament era, and it flows forward. So those people are in one book, and you just got to note that. And the dead were judged from the things were written in the books. Is that the book of life?
No.
According to their deeds. So they're going to have to give an account for all their actions on this earth, and both good and bad. Now, how many bad things does it take to condemn them or as guilty? You know, Clinton is just going one. We've talked about that in Romans class. You know, a spiritual cancer, it just takes a little bit, just one. And they're going to stand by themselves, right? And they have no advocate at all. And because of that, they're all going to be found guilty. And then notice verse 11, and the sea gave up the dead which were in it, death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them, according to their deeds. It's a universal, individual judgment that'll happen at the last day. And death and Hades were thrown in the lake of fire. This is important because in 1 Corinthians 15, talking about the order of the resurrection, Jesus raised first from the dead, never to die again. First fruits for those who would follow after him. But that won't happen till the end, he says. And the last enemy, which he has to abolish, is death itself. And here is where death is conquered, where it gives up all those that have died, both the wicked and the righteous. Now, after they have given it up, what it happens to death? What is he saying? Death and Hades. What's the only people left in Hades? Because remember, it's this realm, which a gulf. The lower half is reserved for those who were wicked, right? The rich man's in there, right? And the upper half is what? It's gone. It's up there before the throne now. So the only thing left in Hades are the wicked, but actually they are removed from that area and taken before the throne. They're part of this judgment, right? So Hades, that realm, whatever it is now thrown in the lake of fire as well, okay? And everyone's name, verse 15, if anyone's name was not found in the book of life, what was his destiny, his or her? They're thrown as well into the lake of fire. Now, it's just that simple. It's over. Done. Two verses. That's all it takes. Yes? None. No judgment. And you say, well, what about their acts? They have one act that they all they have to do is say, and what was that one act? I believed. Jesus was asked, what should we do that we may work the works of God? John chapter 6, what, 28 and 29. He said, this is the work of God, that you believe on him and whom he has sent. That's all you got to do. And all you got to do is say, Lord, I believed in Christ. And I accepted him. I walked in faith by him. And who's going to stand there as your advocate?
Jesus.
And that blood covers you. His righteousness is your righteousness. Because that's what happens. So yes, there's no judgment. Isn't that beautiful? You escape it. You will not be hurt by the second death. We read that last week, or last time.
So, if that's so, you go to hell, you regain your body, you're judged, and then you go back to hell.
Yes. Why do you need a body in hell? I don't know. I'm not going to even find out. I don't want to find out. What about the righteous, their names, book of life? Do they get a new body?
Yeah.
We read that in 1 Corinthians 15. They're raised, sown a physical body. They're raised a spiritual body. What if you're alive in that last day? What happens to you? They're raised first. You'll see that, I guess. And then in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, what happens to you? It's sort of like Star Trek. Y'all see it glowy, I guess. You transport it up. And then you'll meet the Lord in the air, and you'll be with him forever. All right, that's 1 Corinthians 15 and 1 Thessalonians 4. It's the most exciting thing to think about. And that's why I say the only thing that matters in life is faith, family, and friends. Your faith in God will get you there. You want your family to go with you, and your friends are going to help you stay faithful. And you want them to go as well. That's all that matters, nothing else. Yes?
Okay, when Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may according to what he has done, whether good or bad.
Right. That's right. And so, have we all done bad things if our name's in the book of life? Have we done bad things?
Yes. But Jesus took care of
it. They're covered. Yeah. We're talking about that in Romans class. It's coming up. They're covered. It's like they don't exist anymore. And so, when you have to understand, when you take on the righteousness of Christ, you are as holy as God is. He said, well, no, that's almost blasphemous. No. God cannot have a relationship with anything that is any less holy than he is. Do you understand that? And we're going to see in the next chapter that God is now among us, spiritually and literally here on this earth too. And he cannot have a relationship with any of us unless we are exactly as holy as he is. Do you understand that? He cannot have any association with darkness. And it's mandatory that you are as holy as God is. And that happens because of Christ's righteousness is now ours. We're clothed with him. Now you're like, but I don't feel holy. It's not about you. Stop thinking about us. Start thinking about Jesus. And that's what we are. It's the most beautiful thing. So now I want to live holy. Yes.
And there's no secrets about how people will be judged. John 12:48, Jesus says, the words I have spoken is that which will be.
That's right.
So there's no secret. There's no
that's
secret
right.
In books. It's his words.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. Later, it's going to be called chapter 21, the Lamb's Book of Life. And we'll get there in just a second. So, verse 13, here it says, the death and Hades were thrown in the lake of fire. This is the
second death.
What's the first death?
Physical death.
It's either physical death or when you die spiritually. But I think it's physical death because Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, it is appointed for all men to die
once
and then face the
judgment.
When you face the judgment, you don't have to face the second death. The second death is when you're thrown into the lake of
fire.
Eternal separation from God. How do you escape the second death?
By being an overcomer.
By being a saint. By being a Christian. Because we already read, they will not be hurt by the second death. So you don't have to participate in it. Just keep your faith. And say, well, keep your faith. The saddest thing is when people have been a Christian 20, 30, 40 years and they're nearing the end of their life and for some reason they just give up and quit. So close. And they get tired or wore out. I don't know what it is. So close. And now they're facing what? The second death.
It happened in Paul's day with Demetrius and others that went back to the world. They were lured back.
Yeah. Now, I can more understand it in the first century where they're being persecuted and they're suffering terribly physically that people might deny Christ. I don't want to be there because I had hoped to say that I never would deny Christ, but you would never know until you're there. But, yes.
Maybe clarify terms to help some comments I heard from Dave and some other things we've been reading. It is appointed for all to die and then face judgment.
Right. Right.
The judgment is a sentencing. All
right.
Will die and then face sentencing. It's either well done, thou good and faithful servant, because they're covered with the blood of Christ, they're righteous, all their sins are gone, or the pronouncement is, I never knew you, depart from me,
good.
And practice lawlessness. So we all will face a sentencing
good.
In that sense.
I'm glad he brought that up, because we talked about it, we need to clarify that again. If you didn't hear, this judgment is not so much to see if you're guilty or innocent. It's a sentencing for how you lived your life or didn't. It's a sentencing. It's condemnation. Right.
That's the purpose for the books. It's cause as evidence.
That's right.
If the book of life is brought as evidence, this is why. The other books are brought as evidence, this is why.
Because everyone that stands before God, will they know already if they're guilty or innocent?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone whose name is in the book of life, will they know they're going to heaven?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Not because of anything they've done, but because they're clothed with Christ. Yes. Right.
But we have an advocate with the Father.
That's right.
And we can go to him and he's there to forgive us.
Yeah.
To cleanse us.
Right.
That's right.
Because when we talk about the new covenant, we're going to touch on it here in a second. He says, I will remember their sins no more. That's from God. Now, we remember them, but he doesn't. They're gone as far as east from the west. And that's why we should rejoice in the Lord. Thank you. Thank you. I don't deserve this, but thank you. All right? We have to get this through our head. We're going to heaven. We're going to heaven. All right? So, now we're going to be in chapter 21. Now, remember, we're at the final judgment. We've seen that. Now we're going to look at the New Jerusalem. And that's going to answer the question here, because we've seen the kings, what happened to them? Rome's to end, Satan's been bound, saints were exalted, the unbelievers will be judged. Where's the temple now?
It's
in the new Jerusalem. We're going to see that. We're going to answer that. Because the old Jerusalem has been totally destroyed. The temple, one stone not left upon another. There will not be sacrifice again. God will not inhabit that temple anymore. So now we're in chapter 21. And we're going to see the new heavens, the earth. We're going to see the second death again. The bride of the lamb is going to be introduced. Oh, forget the doom of the beast. I don't know why that's there. All right? So there's a lot of language here that we could spend a lot of time on. But guess what? We're not. I saw a new heavens, a new earth. For the first heavens, the earth passed away, and there's no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city of New Jerusalem coming down of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for a husband. There's your first clue. Who is this bride? It's the church, isn't it? But he calls it the city, New Jerusalem. The bride is not in the city. The bride is the city. You see that? What happened to the old city? The old apostate harlot bride, Israel, destroyed. Now we've got the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. Now, is it coming down out of heaven to the earth? Or is it, we've seen a picture of the spiritual realm, because that's what he says, and I saw a new heaven, a new earth. Here's the new order of things. It's not a literal new heaven, a new earth. It's a new order. It used to be the old covenant with Jews only. Now it's a new order, and it's a spiritual Jerusalem made up of people from all nations, and they are the bride of Christ. That's what the new heavens and new earth is. Now, I'll try to break this or show that to you. The word kainos means new in kind of superior quality. It's not the word that means new like a brand new one, all right, of a different type. Salvation in the Bible is consistently presented in the Bible as recreation. This is why creation language and symbolism are used in Scripture whenever God speaks of saving his people. For example, we're going to see that right here, Isaiah talks about, behold, I create a new heavens, the new earth, the former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. And in this, he's talking about how he's going to restore God, his relationship with the people, with the coming of the Messiah. Just as new heavens, new earth, which I will make endure before me, declares Lord, so your offspring, your name will endure. And this language is in the Old Testament speaking about what's going to happen when Christ comes. Now, it's interesting. Galatians 4, Paul uses the same language. Hagar, remember that's the handmaiden to Sarah that Abraham conceived a child with who was named Ishmael. Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. He said, well, that's the Israelites. That's interesting. He's borrowing that picture of Ishmael and applying it to all of Israel. And it corresponds to present Jerusalem, which was destroyed, for she's in slavery with her children. They didn't get it, did they? But the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother, and who is Paul writing to? Christians. So it's interesting, he's using Israel, physical Israel, as the non-covenant child, Ishmael. And our Jerusalem is from where? And that's what we're part of. We're part of the new heavenly Jerusalem. And notice verse 3, a loud voice from heaven, behold, the tabernacle of God is where? Now, a tabernacle means one word. What is it? To dwell. What has God always wanted to do? What did he do in the Garden of Eden? He actually walks with them, right? And when he called Israel out of Egypt and saved them and brought them to Mount Sinai, he says, if you keep my commandments, you will be a special people to me, right? A holy nation, a chosen people of all the people in the world. And you build my tabernacle, and I'll dwell among you. And as long as God dwelled among Israel, what would happen to them?
Nothing.
Nothing. They were untouchable because of who? Who's their warrior? God is their warrior. He's demonstrated by bringing them out of Egypt, protecting them from their enemies. But they forsook him and they were unfaithful. The new covenant's done away. We have a new Jerusalem, a new heavens, and a new earth. And now where does God dwell? Among us, and will dwell among them. And they shall be his people, and God shall be among them. God is our warrior. And he demonstrated that, proof perfect, when he destroyed Jerusalem. Was he being a warrior then? Now, if God was a warrior for those Christians that day, will he battle for you right now? We have to understand how much he has invested in us. Just his son. And what else? He is so serious about getting you home to heaven. He'll battle for you. You just got to cry to him. He'll be there. That's why Hebrews chapter 2, he runs to the aid of those who cry. Jesus, our high priest. He is our warrior. We can make it. And he shall wipe away their tear from their eyes. Why is this here? Because how did a lot of these Christians get to the throne?
They were crying and in pain and tears.
Because they were being persecuted. And then when they left, they were probably being burned at a stake, eaten by a lion, thrust through, crucified, or beheaded. Was there a lot of pain and tears?
Yes.
Now what? He wipes away their tears from their eyes. No longer any death. No longer any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed. This is a new order, a new heavens, a new earth. It's a heavenly Jerusalem. And you are part of it right now. Ephesians chapter 2. We were dead in our trespasses and sin. But God, because of his great love, saved us, made us alive with Christ. And it says, and seated us with him. Well, wait, I'm still here. Spiritually, that's my stature. I'm seated with Christ right now. You see, that's the only way you can make sense of that. We are part of the heavenly Jerusalem right now, and God is dwelling among us. That's why chapter 2 says, you are being built up into a holy temple, a dwelling of God in the Spirit. He lives among us and in us. Yes. Yes.
When he says that, therefore, they're before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple, and they, he who sits on the throne will shelter them with their presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst no more. The sun shall not strike them, no scorching heat, for the lamb is in the midst of them.
Yes.
And will be their shepherd, will guide them to springs of living water, and he'll wipe away the tear from their eyes.
Exactly. Same picture, right? Isn't that pretty? I am the resurrection, Jesus said in the life. He who believes in me shall live even if he dies. That's the first death. But everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Never see the second death. Very good. All right. So verse 5. He who sits on the throne said, behold, I'm making all things new. Write these words are faithful and true. It's interesting. This recreation language is always associated with salvation and deliverance. Because look at Paul says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. It's like God started in the Genesis, made man. That all went south real quickly, right? That's okay, because he had a plan, and now he's recreated all of us in Christ. And he doesn't say you're starting over. He says you are a new creation. Doesn't he? It's a new heavens, a new earth, and we're in the new Jerusalem. It's heavenly. And that's why we're going to see languages in Hebrews chapter 12 if we get there. He said, it is done. Boy, we could follow that word. On the cross, it is finished. That's telestai. That means I finished the course. Victory is mine. And here he's saying the same. It's done. It's all set. We're just waiting for the day. Either our death when we're taken to heaven or when Christ comes. It's already done. The victory's already been decided. We're just waiting patiently, serving the Lord until that day comes, right? Trying to gather as many people to be part of it as well, right? I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life without cost. He overcomes, there's our word, shall inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. And so, but the cowardly, the unbelieving, this is quite a list. Cowardly, maybe that's why they denied Christ.
Yeah.
They're afraid. The unbelieving, that's never did. The abominable, the murderers, the immoral person, the sorcerers, the adulterers, and all liars. And I think that's the people that lie about the gospel or lie about, you know, God. But it's anyone that lies. Boy, it's interesting. Liars are put in there with this list. Because lying is so despicable to God when you are supposed to be truth speakers. All of them, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. This is the second death. Wow. In verse 9, and one of the seven angels had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came. Interesting. We know this angel with the seven bowls of wrath. Come here and I'm going to show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. We already know who it is. Who is it? The church. That's right. And now he says, here's Hebrews 12. He says, you haven't come to a mountain that can be touched. That's at Mount Sinai where Israel gathered around, that's quaked and the lightning, the thunder when God descended. He said, that's not the kind of mountain we approached. What kind of mountain have we approached? Mount Zion. What's Mount Zion a picture of? Jerusalem, because Jerusalem was on this Mount Zion. But this is the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. Myriads of angels to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn. That's who this heavenly Jerusalem is. It's Christ's church, you and me. And you've also come, we're enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, the spirits of righteous men made perfect, who would that be? It's right here. Spirits of righteous men made perfect. I think it would be all the Old Testament saints. They're now in this heavenly Jerusalem too, aren't they? Because the blood saved them as well. And to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant. That's why we have a new heavens, new earth, a new order. That's all it's talking about. Okay? And so he carried me away to see us in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down from heaven. Not to the earth, but he's just seen this vision. Here is the new Jerusalem. All right? Having the glory of God. Now, anytime the glory descended on the tabernacle, everyone had to get out and fall down. They couldn't even enter it because his glory, his Shekinah, was just so magnificent. Here we are living in his presence, and we will be able to see him. 1 John chapter 3 says, face to face, because we will be just as he is. We'll have some his same nature. We'll actually see God face to face. Can you imagine that? Because right now, no one can see the Father and live. Here, like a very costly stone, he's going to use all this language that is of the things that are most beautiful to us, precious stones. 12 gates, and at the gates there's 12 angels. See them down here? And each gate is the 12 tribes, sons of Israel. Speaking of all of God's people. It's borrowing the language of Israel, the 12 tribes, speaking it now of all God's people from every nation. Three gates of the east, north, west, and south. This is amazing. This, the gates also had names, and what were the names? The 12 apostles. So now we're marrying the Old Testament with the new. See? And then he said, measured the city. So he takes his gold measuring rod. And he laid it out a square. Its length is greater than its width. And he measured the city with the rod. 1,500 miles. I forgot to do this, but how far is L.A. from here? All right, so we got to go to Mexico City, maybe? That's one side of the wall of the heavenly Jerusalem. Now, is it literally 1,500 miles? No. What's it saying? Yes, it's just showing the glory of it, all right? Its length and width and height are, it's a perfect cube. Right? Does that make any sense? Don't think a literal city, just something magnificent. Measured its wall, 72 yards according to human measurement. This is really interesting, which is also angelic measurement. There's a direct correspondence between the spiritual and the physical, I mean us in the kingdom. That's all we're seeing here. I don't know what that means. If they have the same kind of measurement than us. That's what it says, though. All right, the wall was jasper. The city was pure gold. And the walls were adorned with every precious stone. And all these are listed, and they are most likely resemble the Ur and Thummim, this breastplate of the high priest, 12 of them. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. One gate is a huge pearl. And you just, that's where we get the pearly gates. All right? It's one huge pearl. And the city, the street was what? Pure gold, like transparent glass. That's pretty pure. And we're not done. And I saw no temple in it. Well, I thought we were going to answer, where's the temple? It was destroyed. Where's the temple? For the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. And the city has no need of sun or the moon to shine upon it, for the glory of the Lord has illumined it, and lamp is his sun. Here's the picture. You had to have a temple. Could God live in that temple? Solomon said, heaven and earth can't contain thee. How much less this puny little house that I've built. So in his prayer of dedication in, what, 2 Chronicles 8, he says, just let your eyes look upon it. And let your ears listen to the prayers that are uttered to this temple. And then act. Because we know you can't live here. This new Jerusalem, who lives there? He actually inhabits it. And who's there with him? You and me. Why is there no need for a temple? He lives there. We are in his abode now. He's not coming down to our abode. He can't do that. We are being transported, and we live in his dwelling place. That's why there's no need for sun or light, because who is the light? I know this book just gets better and better. It's like a climax, and I can see these Christians in the first century. Yes, I will stay faithful. And in its lamp is who? Its lamp is who? The Lamb. He's the light of all men. Jesus already said in chapter 3, verse 12, he overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the sanctuary of my God. You actually are part of the structure, and he will not go out from it anymore. So verse 24, the nation will walk by its light, the king's ears shall bring their glory to it. Daytime, there should be no night there, its gates shall never be closed. He shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations in it. Nothing unclean or will practice abomination lying shall ever enter into it. You can't. It's only those who are washed in the blood of the Lamb and live as holy as they can, but only those whose names are written in the book of life. So you see it again. That's chapter 21, the New Jerusalem. We've tied up all the loose ends, but that was the most important one because that paints a picture of what's happening right now for them and for us today. It's still going on, and when you die, you get to be realized into it fully. Now, chapter 22 is, we're going to finish. Thank you. It's real easy. How did the book of Genesis open up? Huh? No, chapter 3. They're in the garden. They sin. And what did God do?